The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now it's time for our Friday forum, and I'm joined by Philip Ryan, political editor for the Irish Independent, by Marion Harkin, independent TD for Sligo Leitrim, and we're also joined by the Green Party Senator Pauline O'Reilly. Good morning and welcome, one and all. We want to talk first of all about that suspended sentence for Cathal Crotty, Marion, a soldier, serving soldier. Who pleads guilty only after CCTV reveals exactly what he'd done.
I just said earlier, Pat, I don't take to Twitter often, but I just felt I had to last night. I mean, at one level, Pat, I felt incredibly sad for the victim, the woman who put herself out there and saw this happening to her. I felt it sent the wrong message about what happens when men assault and attack women. But I also felt really angry. And I had the two emotions. I just felt as if somebody kicked me in the pit of my stomach. How could this happen? I didn't follow the trial, but the evidence was clear. And to think that somebody would get a suspended sentence in those circumstances devalued that woman so much, but it devalued all women. And I was thinking, if that was my sister or my niece or a female friend, I'd be gutted, but I'd be furious. And look, this is not acceptable, and we have to do something to change the way we do this business.
Pauline.
And in the week that we've had such astonishing figures about the level of domestic violence.
Yeah, the Women's Aid report that was released earlier this week.
The Women's Aid report was shocking.
Pauline? Yeah, look, it's heartbreaking to see somebody put themselves through a trial like that and then come out at the end of it and feel, you know, traumatised all over again, to be honest with you. And as she said herself, she lost her job because of the trauma it caused her. And yet the whole rationale for giving him a suspended sentence seems to be it to protect him from losing his job. And I would 100% agree with Marion. This is about the particular case, but it's also about much more than that. And I've been a family law solicitor. You know, it's hard for people to put themselves forward. And I think that this is going to make it harder. And that's not what you want. But look, obviously there's a separation of powers between government and the judiciary, but I'm not a member of government.
Revisit the kind of instructions that judges get? If they're told you must take into account a guilty plea, you must take into account the lack of a previous record, and therefore you work out your sentence according to some arcane formula that the judiciary has.
Yes, but they also do have an ability themselves to look at the facts of the case. I think, of course, you take into account those things, but it doesn't mean that you then come up at the end of that and say it's a suspended sentence. Now, I had a bill myself co-sponsored with Lisa Chambers and Regina Doherty to make sure that people can't just put forward character references without being cross-examined, because that was another massive issue that we're still dealing with, a legacy going decades and decades. I mean, sometimes you feel like you're in the dark ages in this country when it comes to
violence
against women.
So many people angry about this, this text. So now it's okay to have a vicious thug in our national army because, according to the judge, God forbid, it will ruin his exemplary career if he goes to jail. What career, for heaven's sake? He's only 22.
Yeah, look, I think this is one, and I presume it's still open to the prosecution to appeal the case and appeal the sentence, and that could be looked at again. We've seen cases where it can be overturned in these incidents, and he could potentially get some jail time in the incident. You'd wonder if there is there some element of what his time in the army has played into this as well? Like, if you're in that type of scenario and you're been trained essentially to be an aggressive person, to kill in some instances.
No, I mean, we've had texts from people who are in the army and say that a man like this has no place in the army. What are we doing? From serving members who don't want any part of this.
Yeah, look, and a tribunal was just opened up this week as well by Taoiseach Micheál Martin into the historic allegations of abuses within the army as well. So, look, I don't want to, cast aspersions on anyone in the Defence Forces or suggest that that's anything to do with it. But, look, if these guys are being trained in a way to be built up and to be more aggressive, does that play into it? I don't know. I don't know the exact details of the case.
This text, as someone who wore the uniform for 34 years, I'm disgusted, as are thousands of others who serve or have served. Crotty deserves jail time. He deserves to be kicked out of the Defence Forces, and that judge should feel shame. Please don't think all service personnel are like this. That's from Steve.
Yeah, I think that's fair too. Like, it is for over many years, there was like the male dominance, obviously, in the army. This guy's a young guy. He's only in the door. So perhaps he's probably in a different culture to some of the prehistoric things as well.
But then posting online, boasting about the fact that, you know, two blows to knock her down and two blows to knock her out.
And given that, you know, to say it wasn't, I mean, premeditated, or certainly he certainly didn't feel apologetic straight away afterwards. And this seems to, the fact that he apologised, his contrition seems to have played into the sentence. I mean, I don't understand that part. As I say, there's a separation, but serious questions have to be asked about, you know, about, I do think looking at the ways in which the law can be changed to not give people as much leeway when it comes to cases that are... There's a public element to this. There's the message that it sends out, and it's absolutely the wrong message.
Well, apologies after he was caught out, when the video evidence showed it. I mean, the question is, if that evidence wasn't there...
He was trying to blame her.
He said, she said. That's what it would have come down to. And I agree with those texts from people in the Defence Forces. Their job is to defend. Their job is about safety. It's not about attacking people, attacking women, whoever. It's just... And I presume many people in the Defence Forces today are most unhappy with this outcome.
In a week where they're about to start the investigation into the treatment of women in the army, I mean, it's not exactly... It's a terrible timing coincidence, if you like. Anyway, I want to move on to the Aer Lingus strike and the way Aer Lingus are handling it, Pauline.
It's obviously it's a separate company now at this stage, and they can make their own decisions. But you'd have to say that workers don't take the initiative to strike lightly. Even from a financial point of view, it seems like it would be cheaper for Aer Lingus to sort it out and to give workers what they deserve.
What they want?
What? Well,
24% pay increase.
Look, I understand that, and look, everybody should come back to the table and to discuss it. But just on the facts of even financially, I think it's I'm not sure of the business arrangements around this. But I was listening yesterday morning to the impacts on tourism, and the impacts probably aren't being felt now because it's not global news.
No, but
then
think
it has an impact next year.
Maybe the Taoiseach kind of nailed it when he said that there are people saving up all year for the family holiday and now it's going
absolutely
to be ruined. And the idea, one of our texters put it quite pithily this morning, so next we'll have doctors going on strike at the height of the flu season. Is that what, you know, or nurses taking their services away from the wards when they're needed most? Is that what we've come to?
People have an entitlement to strike, and it's not for us, I guess, to look at the detail of whether what they're asking is fair or not fair. I would always stand behind that collective bargaining.
Yeah, well, look, it's worked a rule. We haven't got to the point of strike yet. There's two sides here. You look at the profit increase in Aer Lingus. It's been hugely significant. Some pilots are on high salaries, but the vast majority of them are on much lower salaries. At the end of the day, Pat, they're going to have to sit down and negotiate. This is not going to be solved over the airwaves by you or me or anybody else. And really, heads have to be knocked together, because, as you said, not just people are going on holidays. People are going to funerals. People are visiting sick people. People are
going
to work.
We've had a lot of stuff, and it's available online, about weddings. You're going to a wedding of 30 guests sent to Italy, to Portugal, to France, or whatever it might be. And, you know,
really important events in people's
but it's
lives.
All the other things, the knock-on, the florist, the photographer, the hotel, the venue, and what becomes critical mass. If granny's not making it, do you call off the wedding? If the father of the bride is not making it, do you call off the wedding? Like, what happens? And who takes the hit for that?
And I think that, you know, this is, I suppose, the knock-on, and this is, in a way, this is what workers have to bargain with as well. Like, they know the importance to a company of their customers staying on site with Aer Lingus, and you know, if will they keep going with Aer Lingus if they can't be sure that people are that people are going to be.
I think they're holding the country to ransom, to be honest. Like, I think it's outrageous. Like,
yeah, now we were used to the French air traffic controllers holding us to ransom if we're flying over France.
Yeah, well, I mean, like 24% pay increase. The starting salary is over 80 grand, and plus whatever else you get on top, you're over 100 grand in your first year.
Yeah, there are sectoral payments.
Yeah, there
every
are.
Sector you fly.
Starting salary isn't 80 grand for all of them, I can assure you.
I think it's pretty much there or there.
For a basic pilot, it's about 80 grand. Some of them are on 200 grand a year.
Yeah,
and they're going to get 50 grand pay increases.
20%.
Do you know, like, that's stomach-turning, to be honest with you. Like, it's like they're holding the country to ransom at a time, like Pat says, people are preparing for their holidays, getting ready to go after they've worked all year, worked hard. They didn't get a 24% pay increase, I can assure you. No, very few people in the country got that this year. And they've saved up for this trip, and they want to get out to the airport and go and spend their week wherever they're going to spend it. And these guys on 200 grand a year are holding them to ransom.
But it comes down to negotiation at the end of the day, and Aer Lingus' profits have increased exponentially.
Sure,
that's the world in which they operate. But
that is the world they operate. It was a capitalist company doing well for itself.
Have people held to
lots
ransom.
Lots of companies do well and don't give 24% pay increases.
No, I understand, but negotiation will sort it. It's the only thing.
There doesn't seem to be any appetite for getting to the WRC anytime soon.
But there has to be. How else will it be sorted?
And I think, like, in the end of the day, they require a buoyant company in order to keep going at their jobs as well. So, each side has some bargaining, I suppose, weapon, for want of a better word.
We don't know the bigger game, IAG obviously owning a number of airlines, and whether or not they are concerned if we give in to the Aer Lingus gang. What does that mean for Iberia? What does that mean for British Airways? If anything, we don't know what's going on in the boardrooms.
And in the meantime, it is ordinary people who are suffering. I just want to read this text out.
Judge Tom O'Donnell has jailed some of the hardest criminals in Limerick over the last 20 years at a time when his own children were school children walking the same streets as those people. He never flinched from locking up those criminals. At times there were attacks on prison wardens' homes. The judge is not known to be soft on crime. One exception, without taking into account his life's work in Limerick, is not fair. This exception in isolation does not define the judge's life's work on behalf of the people of Limerick. That's from Con in Limerick, who says.
I don't think anybody here was personal about it.
Yeah.
I think they were just saying
that
on the facts.
We didn't mention his name, but just
on the facts.
The facts speak for themselves here.
All right. Now, let's talk green. What shape is your party in, Pauline?
It's been a really emotional week, poignant.
Were you one of those that Eamon took into his council and got an early warning?
Well, I have known for some time, yes, and I'm chair of the party, so that would be reasonable, I guess, and we're also very close. It's still emotional when the day comes, though. Even if you're prepared for it and you know the day it's happening, it's still emotional. And we had a really lovely parliamentary party meeting on Wednesday evening. We always have a very collegial parliamentary party meeting on a Wednesday evening, but this one we went round the table, we all gave our reflections on working with Eamon, and he's a visionary and he's done a huge amount and he will leave a legacy. But even as I was saying on Tuesday, that there'll be a legacy and history will look kindly on Eamon, I think already that's what we're seeing. Like, already there's so many tributes coming out to him from across the political spectrum, vox pops done, like in my own city of Galway, that even if you don't agree with everything, you say he was a hard worker, a very decent man. And now we have the exciting news of a leadership election.
And
which
you've nailed your colours to the mast.
I have. And look, myself and Pippa, we're roomies when we come to Dublin. So we share a room. We're like Bert and Ernie in our beds in the evening having a chat about the day. Pippa's up at the crack of dawn off for a run at 6:30. And I won't go. Yeah, I do.
And is there a problem if you've got a senator who is not a TD, and even with a TD who's a minister, do you have a problem? You've got to hope that your leader will be elected to Dáil Éireann?
I think it was a disappointing election, let's be honest about that for us. Now, it was still the second best election that we've ever had, but we were coming from a real high of 2019. I was elected a councillor myself on top the polls, and then you come into this and you lose a lot of your councillors. Yeah. It's been really sad for me personally, having run as well in the European elections, travelling around Midlands Northwest, where we ran 50 candidates. So all of that, I believe that we have to change course. We have to come with energy. I've seen even this week new members join because they are enthusiastic about the green shoots now from Pippa Hackett, and that's why I'm backing her.
Philip?
My overarching view of this is that it all seems a little stage managed. Maybe Pauline will correct
me. It's absolutely not, to be honest.
Of course it is.
The leader has told you months in advance to prepare for a leadership election, and we're expected to believe this is all just happening kind of organically, if you will. And like even members of your own party, I think, seem to think it's all a bit stage managed. And it is about just the Greens being able to get out there, have a debate, have a good debate, because to be able to show, like, look, we are not just a Dublin-centric party worrying about salad boxes on our windows, our south-facing windows and things like that. And there are people like Pippa Hackett who have done well out of organic farming, and to show the public that this is possible. And yeah, that's fine too, but I don't know if you are being overly honest about that.
We are being completely 100% honest.
I agree actually with quite a bit of what Pauline said. I mean, I knew Eamon in the European Parliament as well. I would honestly say, if I stand back and just look, he has been a very effective leader. He's got a lot of policy change in place, whether it's carbon tax, whether it's rural transport, to be fair, that has really improved. And of course, he got the nature restoration law across the final hurdle. He wasn't involved in the gestation of it, but it was absolutely stalled. Now, whether you agree with that or not is another thing. But if I was to stand back and just look at Eamon Ryan's legacy, I think he has a legacy. Of course, there's areas where he hasn't completed what he should have done, like offshore wind energy, anaerobic digesters, retrofitting of homes. There's a long list, but there is also a list of where he has been effective, to be fair to him.
Yeah. Do you think, though, the Greens, Philip, get blamed for all sorts of stuff? You know, you go through Dublin City, it's an obstacle course to get from A to B. There's loads of plastic bollards everywhere for bicycles and all that sort of stuff. And even though it might be Dublin City Council doing it, the Greens get the blame for the chaos.
The one thing with the cycle lanes, I live in Dublin 7, and I'd be terrified to cycle into here, say, or anywhere in the city. Mostly because the cycle lane, we have cycle lanes, but none of them are connected up. Yeah. Like you have a cycle lane, you go, oh, now I'm facing into six buses and some lorries and all that crack. But yeah, look, they do get unfairly blamed. But I think the other parties, and I remember one member of Fine Gael, I think it was, saying to me that governments for years to come will be dealing with Eamon Ryan's legacies because of the various things that he's now baked in, whether it be the legislated
really
climate
issue.
Targets and things like that, and the various climate action plans that they're in place now. And it'll be a brave government in a lot of places to kind of just completely ditch them, or they might have to actually pass legislation.
And that's where I spoke about the nature restoration law. There's lots of good things in that legislation, but we didn't attend to the detail. We didn't make sure there was a European fund in place for this. And we didn't look at issues that impact on Ireland specifically, like land eligibility, like high nature value farming and the role that can play. And that's where I see it as not succeeding. I won't call it failure, but not succeeding in the way that we could have and should have. That the ideology was, we want this, we need it. And then we didn't look at the detail. And to me, that is failure at one level.
Pauline?
And I'm not happy with that.
Pauline?
Look, I think, honestly, nothing could be further from the truth in relation to nature restoration law. But in relation to the legacy, I think that it'll be really interesting over the next decade to see future, politicians from all shades coming out to take credit for the completion of cycle lanes and so on and so forth. But as you say, it's put in motion. We went into government 4 years ago. I was part of the negotiating team to negotiate really hard to get as much as we could in this term of government, so that we made sure that whoever's in the next time, and we hope it will be us, to complete that, it'll be harder for them to roll back, because the last time we were in, things were rolled back.
Be the legacy.
Well, he certainly has.
We have to leave it there. Philip Ryan, political editor with the Irish Independent, and Marion Harkin, Independent TD, and Pauline O'Reilly, Green Party Senator and Chair of that party. Thank you all very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.